WBRI 1500 in Indianapolis.
The Martin Bender Band Cheer Show.
You know, I don't know, maybe I'm a bad person, but to me the events in Eden are almost hilarious. Almost hilarious. The very first trial, man, failed. The very first one. It didn't take a series of, just the first time the temptation was there, bang, fall. You can't tell me God didn't set that up for failure. You cannot tell me God did not set that up in order to fail. Think about it, folks. Without Adam, we don't have Christ. Was Christ God's band-aid? Was Christ a second? Are you going to tell me that Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world, was a contingency? Was God going into the file cabinet for plan B? Or could it be that God had Christ in mind the whole time and created the situation in Eden in order to prepare the way for his manifestation?
Yeah.
Oh, you're awake now.
I agree with that.
You agree with that?
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Either that or God is putting out fires. The very first trial, they fell. And in Eden, man is less prepared than he ever will be. Any subsequent thing, God gives more gifts. Never since has man been that helpless, in my opinion, than in the Garden of Eden. So now God gives man a conscience. Now he had a constant deterrent in himself. And again, we said this took the place of God actually walking with them in the garden. He had an inward restraint. Conscience is kind of, I don't want to sound mystical here, but it is kind of like a divine voice that indwells each person. And what did this lead to? Utter depravity.
Exactly. It led to Genesis 6, the culmination of conscience from Genesis 3 to Genesis 6 was man was corrupt and violent. And that's the reason why God brought the flood. God says there in Genesis that behold, the earth is full of is corrupt and full of violence.
And it's hard to see it while it's happening, folks, but it's happening to be for man's ultimate happiness. Because all these things have to be, all man's opportunities have to be exhausted.
Exactly.
We have to see him under a progressive series of demonstrations where he has further advantages and he still fails.
Exactly.
This is essential to man.
And more is the more sin, yes, the more God is revealed, which is interesting. The more you get through these time periods, I said time periods advisedly because we know the administrations take place within a framework of time.
Sure.
But they're not time periods.
Right.
But in time, God reveals himself gradually.
Yes.
You know, there's the principle in Romans, the book of Romans, where sin abounds, grace does
much
more
abound.
And so God reveals himself through these events. Remember we talked about earlier that this is an orderly event. And we're going through here orderly.
Yes.
At first we see man in the garden in innocence, Genesis 1 and 2. And then we see man in his conscience, Genesis 3 through 6, ends in corruption and violence. God destroys him, wipes him out. And then we come to Genesis chapter 9.
Which is actually, all these things, strange to say, are essential to man's future happiness.
Isn't it amazing?
That
it's
point
essential.
Can't be overlooked. It's essential
you
to man's
cannot,
happiness.
You cannot know life without experiencing death. You cannot know love without experiencing hate. You cannot know saving work of Christ without experiencing what it is to be without him.
Yeah, and we've all had experiences in our lives where we look back and said, if only I had done that, I could have made that happen. Why didn't I do that? Why didn't I do that? God is eliminating that agony in the future. We'll never have the burden of looking back and saying, oh, why didn't we try that? Why didn't, if we had tried this kind of government, we could have made a utopia. Oh, if only we had, Adam and Eve could have said, well, if only we'd had a conscience, well, this wouldn't have happened. Okay, here's a conscience. Utter depravity. Well, if only, and I'm anticipating our next point, if only we had human government. If we had human government, then we'll straighten things out. And you see what I mean? Each time God's saying, okay, here's human government. These aren't just random things. He's giving advantage upon advantage. And so the next advantage God gives us is in
Genesis
chapter
9,
can you read? Can you read that?
God tells him after the flood. Remember, before the flood, man was full of corruption and violence. Then you come to Genesis chapter 9. He says, "Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man."
Those are epic words.
Epic words.
Never before spoken. This was a whole new concept. Nobody had ever heard of man judging man.
Man judging man to restrain.
To restrain evil.
To restrain the corruption violence that took place before.
You see, before it was every man for himself.
Isn't that, what does it tell you about human government? People think human government's for positive things, like they're trying to do today.
Yeah.
Government's going to help people out. No, government, once government gets involved in that, then you're screwed up.
It's another administration.
Government is negative. It's just to restrain this corruption and violence to a degree. Only,
really,
obviously.
If you want, when you finally do get a utopia, you're not going to need government.
That's
it's
exactly
ultimate
right.
Mm-hmm. Utopia. But in Adam, before this law, this government came by your blood shed, shed whatever is that. Before it was every man for himself.
Every man for himself.
And nobody judged another person.
That's right. That's why Cain can get away with murder. God doesn't kill him.
He literally gets away with murder.
God protects him.
Yeah, that's right. We take it for granted that it's always been this way, that we've always had a government. We haven't.
No.
You also take it for granted that you always had that little inner voice that tells you what's right and wrong. It wasn't always that way. And we're crazy for being dispensationalists? Duh. You have to be duh not to see that God does different things at different times.
Exactly.
Different vending machines as you go down the line in the vending area.
Yeah.
So, yes, God, now we have governments, and
Genesis
that. What
9.
Does that lead to, Dan?
Well, then Genesis 9, and we come to Genesis 10 and 11, where we see the failure in there. When the
Tower of Babel,
they build a Tower of Babel in defiance against God. It's a place of confusion.
What? How could they defy God after He gave them the wonderful governments?
And he gave them the wonderful, and they defy God, and He confounds the languages and scatters them. And by the way, this is the first time ever we read of nations. There were no nations prior to Genesis.
I thought we always had nations.
Never had, no.
See,
there were no nations
stuff.
Or even multiple languages before the flood. There were no nations, no kings even.
We are so dumb today. We take so much for granted.
Exactly.
It's always been this way.
No,
it has not.
And by the way, this is a key because we're going to talk about, when we get later on to the administrations, the last two, there are still kings and kingdoms. Kings and kingdoms are a result of the sin of mankind. And in Genesis 10 and 11, we have the failure of human government, the scattering of the people at the Tower of Babel. And then what happens is God calls out one man, Abraham, and gives in him promises to bless all the nations of the earth.
So as a government...
But think about this.
Yes.
The
what?
Failure of man leads to greater blessing.
Yeah, God gives another advantage. As government fails, man could say, oh, well, of course we can't govern ourselves, but God, if you could only just come down and actually talk to us and tell us what to do and give us an expectation, then we'll be able to do it. And you start to laugh because you hit yourself in the head, oh my gosh, I'm seeing it. I'm starting to see the purpose of these things. They're demonstrations. Man says, well, if you just come down and talk to us. So God did that. Mm. And in Genesis 12, he calls a man called Abraham.
And gives him unconditional promises.
Unconditional promises. And again, this is something that had never happened before in the history of mankind.
Yeah. So what does God do? He scatters the nations in Genesis 10 and 11, and then he picks one man, Abraham, to bless those nations.
Yes.
The nations who rebelled against him.
Oh,
good
point, yeah.
So he's going to bless them through this man, Abraham. And that's when the promise, this is the fourth administration, beginning in Genesis 12.
It's an improvement.
And it's an improvement. Genesis 12 is the promise coming in, which takes us from Genesis 12 to Exodus chapter 19.
Do you know why I think this is an improvement?
Why is that?
Because it gave man, for the first time, really an expectation.
Exactly.
And an expectation should be a potent power in a person's life to enable a mortal to live rightly. If you have an expectation, then wow.
Yeah.
Think how great it would be to be Abraham.
By the way, pulling back the curtain a little bit, before this resurrection was known,
What resurrection?
Resurrection, period.
Okay.
At the end. With the calling of Abraham, resurrection hope has moved up 1,000 years. I want you to ponder that.
Oh.
Resurrection hope has moved up 1,000 years.
Where did we first hear resurrection,
in
Job?
The book of Job, yeah. And that's not till the great white throne.
Now look what happens. Very good. We'll ponder that.
Yeah.
Look what happens now as God comes in with the promise. He doesn't discard any of the other blessings he gave. Man still has the knowledge of good and evil, right?
Yeah.
He still has he didn't eliminate the conscience when he moved into the human government, did he?
No.
No, man still had a conscience. So they're taking the dispensations with them.
Yeah.
The administrations change, and the administrator changes, but the dispensations that were given are carried over.
Yeah.
So the human government people still have the conscience.
Yeah.
So they're building on it. And then when we go into the promise, we're not discarding government and conscience.
Yeah.
We're taking conscience and government into the new administration of the promise.
And the same with our next administration law.
The law comes next.
The law
right.
comes next.
Because
number five.
We're getting more and more details. Okay, God, well, tell me how the promise didn't lead to a utopia. Even when God gave Abraham a promise, that didn't lead to any utopia of any kind. What was the major problem after that? I mean, what do we see mankind doing in the wake of God's promise to Abraham? All the other nations are going their own way.
Yeah, well, Genesis 12 begins a promise, and it's a good thing. It's unconditional. That's the key to this. Paul uses it in his own letters to demonstrate justification by faith. But God promised through Abraham to bless all nations. And and we have it this way from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob. And finally, Moses comes on the scene. And Galatians tells us that the law was added because of transgressions.
Added. Oh, you mean God added it?
He added.
There was a time when it wasn't
any addition.
Law?
Yeah.
He did something different?
That's right. He did something different. He added law.
Does that make us dispensationalists,
promise.
Or does that make us normal people
how
reading
this? How about it makes us sane and common sense folks following the very signpost that God has pointed? And so after the promise comes the law of Moses. And by the way, the law made nothing perfect. No man is justified by works of law, and this is one of the great reasons. God gave Abraham a promise, and people had a problem with that promise. You mean God's going to justify us without any works of any kind? God justified Abraham? But God had to show Israel and the world that we all descend from a common stock.
Yeah.
And that's Adam.
and here's what the folks under the promise could have said to God. Okay, you gave us promise. We still haven't created this utopia, but you're not specific enough, God. You need to give us details. A promise is a promise, but it's so vague. We don't know how we're going to get there. Give us specific details, and we will do it. We will bring this promise to fruition in our own strength. And there came your foundation for the administration of law. The dispenser is Moses. And this was perhaps the most definite practical assistance given to man as far as God goes. Here's the directions. It was a situation, it was another demonstration, it was a test, the biggest setup since Eden. It was set up to fail.
Yeah.
You might even call it the most disappointing, because with all the details, man fails so miserably.
And there's no law from Adam till Moses. Romans 5, there was no law at this point. Man was under, there was no Ten Commandments given.
Once again, we take it for granted that this law has always been here. There was a time when it wasn't here, and on a day in history, God decided to give it to Moses. It was the beginning of a new dispensation and a new administration.
And guess what was reigning from Adam to Moses?
What? Death.
Death.
Death. That's what's dispensed.
Even over men who didn't disobey the commands of God.
The law of Moses is the vending machine that dispenses death and condemnation. We're moving on because God moves on. He did something after this. We're going to tell you what it is tomorrow.
All right.